As all eyes are on the Gulf, there's some good news for Saints fans. Covers and mist are coming for bleacher seats at training camp. Who's Ed Orgeron bringing to Hoover, Alabama? And when will the Tigers speak? We'll get a weather update. The second half of the baseball season is about to begin. Are the Astros ready to make a deal to improve their pitching staff? And Paul Maneri joins us talking about his new hitting coach and some new additions to his ball club. It's all coming your way today, Wednesday, July 10th, 2019.
Bottom of the seventh, two-run game again. And here is Gallo, and there it goes. Home run, Joey Gallo. He didn't wait around. And a two-run game becomes a three-run game. It's 4-1 here in the All-Star game in the seventh. This would be the second time that Chapman does that feat, and he's got him. Struck out the side, and a smile from Aroldis Chapman as he gets the All-Star Game save, and the American League has now won seven straight as they win this one 4-3.
Hey, good afternoon. All in all, a pretty darn good Midsummer Night Classic, and the All-Star break was very good. The Home Run Derby was excellent. The game was well played. The American League gets a win. Today's kind of an off day in the world of sports, unless you're at Wimbledon, where Roger Federer advanced and Rafa Nadal get advanced, as did Novak Djokovic advance. So all the big guns are moving on at the fortnight of Wimbledon. But Major League Baseball will resume tomorrow, and we've got a lot to talk about today. I literally just saw a picture on Canal Street, a dude literally swimming down Canal Street. It has rained that much. Soon to be a tropical depression. Reports are that Barry's going to become a hurricane by Saturday. And we'll see where it's going. The latest European projection has moved it a little bit to the east, but we're going to get a lot of rain. And with that in mind, Chris Cozart of KLFY, the weather meteorologist there, will join us in this hour to give us the very latest as we try to keep all of Acadiana updated on what to anticipate, what to expect, and what to do in preparation for this. What appears to be soon a tropical depression and, in all likelihood, our first hurricane of the season. So let's keep our fingers and toes crossed along the entire Gulf Coast on that one. We will go to Cleveland. Chandler Rome, the Astro beat writer for the Houston Chronicle, friend of the program, is flying out of Cleveland, but we'll catch up with him prior to his departure and get his thoughts on the Midsummer Classic and the stretch run from the Astros. They are tied for the best overall win percentage and win record in the American League with the Yankees and a game or two ahead of the Minnesota Twins. They're the best team in their division by far, but the trade deadline is approaching, and who's going to be buyers, who's going to be sellers, and what do the Astros need to get to make a championship run? So we'll talk to Chandler Rome about that. And then around 3:30 this afternoon, Paul Maneri will join us. He's got a new hitting coach. He's got a couple of new infielders. And I've got to ask the million-dollar question, Paul, what are you going to do about this recurring theme of having pitchers injured and not able to play during the course of a season? And I'm sure Paul, who has been ultra-successful every good coach does a self-evaluation, and that's not going to be any different with Palmieri. So we'll find out those details. My main man, CD, back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Yes, indeed. Saints announced their training camp schedule. Saints fans will be happy to know that they have got seat covers and those cooling mist fans are coming for those to get their bleacher seats to see this Saints club practice. And there's going to be, look, rookies report July 18th. July 18th, 8 days from today, the rookies will report to the Ochsner Sports Performance Center in Metairie. Veterans are scheduled to report July 25th. The Saints are going to have 12 practices open to the public with the first schedules for 8:50 a.m. on July 26th. The final training camp practice is scheduled for 8:50 a.m. on August 22nd. Saints love to have the fans there. According to the Saints, fans wishing to attend camp practices can reserve tickets by registering at the team's official website, www.NewOrleansSaints.com. Saints season ticket holders can register for training camp tickets July 16th. The season ticket waiting list members can register on July 17th, and the public can register online July 18th. So all these things, look, they're going to have the August 4th evening practice at Tulane, and the admission information on that will be announced at a later date. Dates and times are always subject to change, and any practice session can be moved indoors because of an inclement weather, and that will be closed to the public. The Saints open the four-game preseason slate. They host the Minnesota Vikings in the Superdome August the 9th, and they'll spend some time the following week in Costa Mesa, California, for joint practices with the L.A. Chargers ahead of the second preseason game on August the 18th. So stay tuned for that. Look, rookies report 8 days from today. Holy cow. Amazing. All right, Ed Orgeron and LSU will be traveling, as will 103.7 The Game. RP3 and company will be there. We'll have live reports Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday here on our show at 2:15. Get the latest lowdown on what occurred during each and every session with each and every coach and each and every player. But LSU's returning starting quarterback, their starting center, and their All-American safety will be representing the Tigers at the SEC Media Days. Joe Burrow, who was named the offensive MVP in LSU's Fiesta Bowl victory over Central Florida, will attend the annual event along with Lloyd Cushenberry, one of two offensive linemen to start in every game last season, and Grant Delpit, who was a finalist for the Nagurski Trophy and will wear the team's number 7 coveted jersey this year. So media days start on Monday. Burrow, Delpit, Cushenberry are scheduled to speak on July 15th, Monday, from 2:30 p.m. until 6:30 p.m., along with head coach Ed Orgeron. LSU's listed second in that time slot behind Florida head coach Dan Mullen, who's going to bring Felipe Franks, amongst others, to the soiree. So Monday will be a very, very busy day. Missouri, the first team scheduled to speak following SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey's State of the Union address, which begins around 11:30. So it'll be a busy, busy week next week. No surprise with Burrow. No surprise with Delpit. I thought maybe they would bring Rashard Lawrence, but he went a year ago, so they bring somebody else. And Cushenberry, certainly deserving of the – it's kind of a reward. It's an honor to be a part of that. So we'll have you covered all week long here on 103.7 The Game at the SEC Media Days. Last year was at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta. This time it'll be back in Hoover, Alabama. So you'll see all the Alabama faithful fans lined up to see when Nick Saban enters into the hotel doors and quickly escalates and goes up. The funniest story ever was when his dog got loose at one of the meetings, and the other was Nick Saban made his security contingent, clear the bathroom and stand in front of the bathroom door so Nick could take care of his personal business in solitude and not have anyone standing next to him asking him questions in the bathroom. Don't blame him for that at all. Don't blame him for that at all. What are some of the most unreachable, unbreakable records in college sports? Well, we've got a couple that might dazzle you, and a couple of them involve some records set by an LSU individual performer and an LSU team performance. We'll take our first break of the day, and we will explain some of those, including a running back that the numbers will never be reached. It just won't. Unbreakable records in college sports. Next, here, the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station. Come on back.
You're listening to the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
Welcome back. As we anticipate the rains that are coming, and we'll have Chris Cozart of KLFY for the latest update on Barry. I don't know. Barry is what, a tropical depression? I don't know. It's causing a havoc, and literally. Clint, I just sent you a picture. Did you see it? Did you see that?
Yes, I did, Jordy. It's
literally
wild.
A guy.
Away from me.
A guy literally swimming down Canal Street in downtown New Orleans. That's just crazy. Just crazy. Some other things that are crazy. I saw this and just kind of thought we'd have a little bit of fun with it. Some unbreakable records. There was a season when Barry Sanders in 1988, get this now, he had the single most dominating season on the ground in the history of college football. He averaged 238.9 yards per game. 238.9 yards per game. A record that likely will never be broken. Marcus Allen was a distant second, 26 yards less than what Barry Sanders did that. Sanders that year ran for the highest single total in a season, 2,628 yards. He had four 300-yard games with at least three touchdowns and totaled 37 touchdowns on the season. Now, on a little note beside that, college football didn't include bowl games officially as a part of season stats until the 2002 season. So Sanders played a 12th game that season in the Holiday Bowl. He ran for 222 yards and five more touchdowns. So in 12 games, that was 2,850 yards. Football has changed. The spread, the read option. Nobody's going to carry it that much. But even he, unbelievable numbers, 2,628 yards on the ground in 1988. That is unbelievable. Here's another one that's never going to happen. Houston Cougar quarterback Andre Ware took home the Heisman Trophy 1 year after Barry Sanders. He had a monster 1989 season, but it was in a 95-21 win over Southern Methodist on October 21st of 1989 that stands out as his most memorable game during that award-winning year. Ware threw for 517 yards in that game with a total of six touchdowns in just the first half. He didn't play one down in the second half, handed the ball off to David Klinger. 517 yards and six touchdowns in one half. There'll never be a lopsided score quite like Georgia Tech when they beat Cumberland 222-0. The record's over 100 years old. 222-0. The 1939 Tennessee football defense, they finished 10-0. They were a perfect 6-0 in SEC play. There was also something else that was perfect in that 1939 calendar year, the Tennessee defense. 10 games played, not 1 point scored on them. A streak of 15 straight shutouts. Holy cow, amazing. That's just a few in the game of football. In baseball, I don't know if there will ever, there'll never be a coach that wins as many games as Mike Martin with 2,029. But one close to heart was involving LSU baseball. The 2019 New York Yankees recently got Major League Baseball all excited that with a power surge that saw them homer in a record 31 straight games. That's not even half of what LSU accomplished between June 8th of 1996 and February 21st of 1998. The Tigers hit at least one home run in a game spanning three different seasons, including all 70 of their 1997 national championship run. We called it Gorilla Ball, and it was a fun one. LSU launched an unthinkable 188 home runs in 1997. 188. Vanderbilt set a program record in leading D1 baseball with 100 this past season, just to give you an idea of how many 188 in one season is. LSU baseball's ridiculous 77-game home run streak, an unbreakable record. And I still think to this day, look, you've got 111 straight wins for Gino Auriemma and his UConn Huskies. You've got 88 straight wins by UCLA under the John Wooden's tutelage. And in women's basketball, the Tennessee Volunteers had 38 straight wins. Or Pat Summitt, rather, coached 38 seasons. Not one of them was a losing record. Unbelievable streaks. But the one, of course, that will never be broken is what Pistol Pete did. Whether it's his single season mark of 1,381, his career mark of 3,667 points, it just seems like an impossibility to see either number touched. Players don't stay that long anymore. They go. In fact, his 1,381 points in 1970 are the most ever. 1 year earlier, the fourth most points ever scored in the season. And they didn't play nearly as many games, and they didn't have a three-point line, and they didn't have a shot clock. He averaged a mind-boggling 44.2 points per game over his 83-game, three-year career. To put that in perspective, Chris Clemens of Campbell led D1 this past season with a three-point line, with a shot clock, and he averaged an impressive 30.1 points per game. He scored 993 total points for the year. Pistol Pete averaged 14.1 points per game more and scored nearly 400 more points overall. The greatest basketball player in college that I've ever seen. The greatest show ever on a basketball court. And the numbers, well, they'll just never, ever, ever be broken. Just some of those records in sports that are amazing. Mia Hamm, the former North Carolina Tar Heel, scored 97 points in one soccer season. Amazing. On a personal note, some news and factoids. The LSU Hall of Fame committee has met to induct a new class. One of the headliners will be Brady James, the former LSU football player. And it has not been announced yet, but I'm here to tell you that they voted to retire the jersey of one former Chris Jackson, number 35, from back in the day, the scoring guard for LSU basketball that was spectacular. His number 35 will be hung from the rafters, and it won't be worn again by an LSU basketball player. He changed his name to Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, and there was some controversy over the national anthem back when he was with the Denver Nuggets. But I think all LSU fans will put that aside, and they'll remember the excellence of Chris Jackson on the hardwood and his ability with Tourette syndrome to play the game of basketball in a fashion that was just kind of remarkable at the time. He wasn't a Pistol Pete, but he certainly was talented, to say the very, very least. So Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, we know him back then at LSU as Chris Jackson, will have his jersey retired, compliments of the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame committee. So you've got Pete, Bob Pettit, Shaq, Rudy Macklin, and now Chris Jackson. That's a pretty darn good starting five. I'll put that starting five against any other college's five best players in basketball history, and I'll win. I will win. No question. We are brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. It's a wingless Wednesday at Hooters. They always have specials going on each and every day. And it's just a great look. They have completely renovated the store right there on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. So it's new. It's unique. It's different. It's got flat screen TVs everywhere. And you can get in on the action each and every day with everything. You can get saucy with delicious boneless wings on the Wingsday platter. Only $8.99 all day, every Wednesday. Dine in only at Hooters, because Hooters just makes you happy. We'll get a tropical update. What's going on with Barry? How is it going to affect all of the great folks in Acadiana? We've already seen the remnants of part of it in New Orleans, where it's flooding like crazy. We'll get the very latest from Chris Cozart next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Okay, welcome back. 33 minutes after the hour. We are a sports and entertainment show, but we're also one that wants to spread the word to the community. Our governor, John Bel Edwards, has just issued a state of emergency today in preparation for the impact of the low-pressure system in the Gulf of Mexico. According to the governor, the system will likely produce storm surges, hurricane-force winds, and up to 15 inches of rain across the state. So how is this going to affect Acadiana, all of you, and everyone in our listening range, however you may be joining us. So I thought we'd go to one of the experts in town, and that's the meteorologist at KLFY, Chris Cozart, kind enough to join us. Chris, I greatly appreciate the time. I know you are very busy at this time. Thanks for coming on. What can you tell us about the latest on Barry?
Yeah, it's not technically Barry yet, but what we have right now, the National Hurricane Center is starting to issue advisories on that area of low pressure that you mentioned. Still very, very disorganized. It's producing a lot of rainfall across the northeastern Gulf. It actually brought in some tropical moisture to New Orleans this morning, and you probably heard about some really flash flooding on Bourbon Street and other parts of New Orleans. So we're already starting to see some impact from this system, but what they're calling it right now is potential tropical cyclone 2. And basically what that means is, hey, we're probably more of a certainty going to see a tropical storm, if not a hurricane, in the next really 48 hours. And that's why they start issuing that, so that the local agencies know to prepare for a hurricane or a tropical storm here. And it also allows for the National Weather Services to start issuing advisories. And there is a storm surge watch and also a tropical storm watch posted across the Houma areas back towards the southeast. Nothing here in Acadiana at this time, but with the latest cone, We have this system now coming in as a Category 1 hurricane sometime late Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, in that time frame, as a Category 1 hurricane, 85-mile-per-hour winds, and the forecast and the models just are not painting the best picture for our area. And as you mentioned, you know, hurricane-force winds, we would have that storm surge, but the system itself is going to pack a lot of rainfall. And within Acadiana, you said it, some areas could see 15 inches or even more. That's going to be our overall concern, but there is still a good amount of uncertainty on where this is actually heading, and that's crucial to take from that forecast as well.
No matter where it hits, and eventually it will, Acadiana will, at the very least, as you said, accumulate a lot of rain. When can our listeners, when can Acadiana expect this rain to start, and how long is this rain going to be around?
Well, we're already starting to see some scattered showers and storms. We'll see that, you know, today, this afternoon, this evening, and then everything should settle down each night and then kind of ramp up there in the afternoon. But really, the widespread rain threat would start as early as late Friday, going into Saturday morning as those first outer bands start to move in. And the more westerly track this system goes, if the center of circulation goes over Lake Charles, even over towards Beaumont, into those areas, that's where we're going to have a real concern to see those significantly high rainfall totals, because where the system produces the rainfall will be on that east side or the right side of the system. If we can happen to see a change in direction, which some of the models keep flip-flopping back and forth, if, let's say, the center of circulation goes more over New Iberia and over the basin, well, that would keep Acadiana from the really significant stuff, and that would put it more towards Baton Rouge and those areas east. So a 50 to 100-mile difference here will make a huge, huge impact on the severity of how much rainfall we see here.
Chris Cozart of KLFY, be sure you tune in each and every. I know you guys are busy going around the clock on this. There are areas in Acadiana where if you sneeze, it floods. What are you telling people? What's the best way for them to prepare for this?
Well, they know those areas, right? I mean, we're getting pretty used to these rain events. I mean, we had one there at the beginning of June. That was not a tropical system, produced about, I would say anywhere from about 6 to 10 inches, though, in a matter of 12 to 24 hours. And you saw all the issues that we've had just in Lafayette on a massive country. So a sandbags, my house, never has flooded, but it sure does seem like it gets awful close. So all we get in the sandbags, even though I've never flooded, it's a little too late for flood insurance if you don't have that. But that's always something that you should look into. Even if you're technically out of a flood zone, you should always have flood insurance on your house. It's Southern Louisiana. There's always a possibility that your area will flood.
Yeah. And look, it's never too early to prepare. I mean, the grocery store, there is always the potential of power outages. Get your generators ready. Do all that. Get your batteries ready. Get flashlights. Get candles. All the little things that we kind of take for granted because of electricity and air conditioning and all that kind of stuff. It's never too early to stock up. This is just kind of the beginning of hurricane season. This is only storm number 2 in reality, with a lot more potential down the road.
Absolutely. You know, the peak of hurricane season isn't really until September. So we didn't even have a system in July last year. It was kind of a slow July last year. But this will be the second one. This will be the B storm. The thing that has my concern a little bit with the heavy rain, obviously, but as you mentioned, power outages, I don't see a lot of people talking about that. We've had a very wet first half of the year. I mean, we've been fighting rain and rain and rain. So the ground is saturated, and these trees, it won't take much to have a strong wind knock over some of these trees across Acadiana. So if we're looking at anywhere from wind speeds of 30 to 60 miles per hour, but again, the National Hurricane Center is showing 85 now, I think we will have a problem with some trees toppling over, and obviously that could include some power lines in there too.
Chris, how different is the European model from the National Weather Service model? Are they kind of even, Stephen? Or because the European model looks like it's more favorable to Acadiana, where you would be on the western side of things at this point in time, always subject to change.
So the National Hurricane Center, they update that forecast cone that you see 4 times a day, 4 a.m., 10 a.m., 4 p.m., 10 p.m., And so they wait for the model runs to happen. Usually, and the European model is very, very good. It's the superior of the models when it comes to tropical systems. It usually outperforms all the ones. So the National Hurricane Center tends to kind of put a lot of their eggs in the European basket. I don't blame them for as consistent as they've been on this one. But I bet with the next 4 p.m. update coming around here in an hour and a half, you'll probably see that cone shift just a touch east here and put more of that center track right over the hub city, because that's kind of where the models have trended for this afternoon, which, again, is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just going to be a very, very close call for us here in our area.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, these things have you been through before?
I've been through some of them. My first one was Isaac, and that was 7 years ago, 2012. And that was a Category 1 where we had the center actually move over towards Baton Rouge and those areas. So, again, Acadiana missed a lot of that. And, of course, we've had Harvey. We've had a lot of close calls the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Nothing that's actually really significantly made landfall here in Acadiana. So, you know, my theory is your luck finally runs out. You know, your odds are against you each hurricane season. When you don't get one, you're eventually going to get one that comes in.
Yeah. I'm sure that all the powers to be that run the city, the mayor and emergency preparedness, I'm sure they're getting in touch with all you guys. And I can't thank you enough for all the work that you do. Keep Acadiana informed, and be sure to tune in. And again, just prepare. Just use common sense, right? Don't be one of those people that gets out there and just wants to see how high the water may be somewhere. It's not necessary. You just stay home, bunker down, and ride this thing out, depending upon how severe it may be. Always expect the worst, and if it isn't, then you caught a break.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be completely fine if this forecast flops on us. It's one of those deals where I can see the potential of how severe the conditions could be for our area, so obviously we don't want to see that happen. Preparation is always the key here. Sandbags, everything you can. I know the grocery stores are probably already starting to get pretty busy here, so try to get your bottled water, fresh water as much as you can. And, you know, we'll have to watch out. A Category 2 hurricane isn't off the board here. We call what rapid intensification. The Gulf of Mexico right now, the waters there are running about 90 degrees Fahrenheit here, and that's above normal. That's more in line with what we would see in August or early September in the peak of hurricane season. So there is a lot of fuel, per se, for this storm to work off of. And a rapidly intensifying storm before landfall can't be ruled out and should always be, you know, a possibility in the back of your mind.
And also, we saw water spouts over Lake Pontchartrain. Is that something to be concerned about more inland like Acadiana is?
Yeah, absolutely. You would have more of those quick tornadoes spin up. That would be, again, dependent on the path of this, and that would be located strictly on the eastern half or the right side of the system. That's where you have the tornado threat. It would be a low one, but even Harvey, when they were dealing with all the heavy rains in Houston, we had several tornado warnings as being on the result of that right side of that circulation. So water spouts and then obviously tornadoes would be our main concern. But usually they're on the weaker side, EF0, EF1, but those can still do damage.
Chris Kozar, KLFY, I know you're busy. Thank you for your time. Thanks for updating everyone. So right now, in summation, it's out in the Gulf. There is a state of emergency for the state of Louisiana, but we don't anticipate anything really hard until Friday, late afternoon, evening into Saturday. Is that kind of basically it in a capsule?
Yeah, if we have to put landfall timing on that, it's really a late Friday, more in line to Saturday morning that we would start that. So we have a few days to prepare for this. And there's plenty that can change because, again, this system is not a system yet. It's not an organized, textbook-looking storm. So the models are going to be a little confused at this point on where it's heading. And once it starts to organize, which it should here in the next 1 to 2 days, that's when everything really starts to come together. And those models will get much, much better on the accuracy of where it's going.
Can we lean upon you in the days to come, just as we get closer and closer? We'd love to get you on to update everybody if that's if that fits into your time schedule. We don't want to interfere with your work in any way, shape, or form, but we'd love to lean on you if we can.
Go right ahead. I'll be here all the way through the storm. You know me, so I'll be here same time or whatever you guys. Just let me know, and I'll help you out.
You see, you're like those football coaches now. You're sleeping in the office because the work never ends. But, Chris Cozart, thank you, my friend, and keep up the great work.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me.
All righty. There's Chris Cozart, KLFY. Nothing to sneeze about, never is. We're used to it, but are you really ever used to it? No, every storm brings a new thing with it, and all you have to do is go look at the city of New Orleans right now. I know it's unique. I know it's below sea level. I know all of that, but just look at what happened within a short period of a few hours with heavy, heavy rain. It will affect everything. There are streets in Acadiana. There are streets all over this state that an inch hits and it's flooded. So just magnify that tenfold. And you can understand. So be careful. Use your time wisely. Prepare. Get ready. And if nothing happens, then you just put it in a big old box. You save it for when the next potential thing happens. But you're going to get some rain. There's no question about that. And we hope that's all you get. But, again, early on, but prepare and keep it locked in here to 103.7 The Game. We'll keep updating you throughout the course of the day, as warranted. And I want to thank Clint for getting Chris on the show. How'd I do as far as the meteorology of things were concerned, Clint? Did we do okay?
I think we did okay. You know, you let him handle the heavy work, and I think that winds up being the best thing for everybody. He can definitely give you all the information needed, especially from that aspect, because it is definitely a thing in progress. You never know what could wind up happening in the next 24 hours, especially us in Louisiana. We know that all too well with weather.
That's right. Look, I always laugh at meteorologists. I always say they got the greatest gig in the world. They're right 50% of the time. They're wrong 50% of the time, but that's on certain day. I trust them when it comes to this stuff. This is when they earn their bread and butter, and Chris does a tremendous job, and we greatly appreciate his time. We will be back. We promise to get back to sports here on the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
All the best guests join the Jordy Helpert Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 103.7thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, we got a couple of good guests coming up. Hour number two, Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle talking about the All-Star game. The Astros well represented. In fact, the SEC was well represented. The league where it just means more. You had three former Vanderbilt Commodores, Mike Minor, Sonny Gray, and Walker Buehler. You had James McCann, a former Arkansas Razorback, Whit Merrifield from South Carolina. He had Pete Alonso, you know, not bad in the home run derby, from the Florida Gators. And then you had Alex Bregman with the Astros and DJ LeMahieu, both of LSU, and now DJ with the New York Yankees. So well represented was the SEC in the Major League All-Star Game. If you're just joining us, again, SEC Media Days are coming up starting on Monday. LSU will be in the 2:30 to 6:30 p.m. slot. Ed Orgeron announced today who he is bringing along with him. No surprises in Joe Burrow and Grant Delpit. Maybe some were surprised that Lloyd Cushenberry, the starting center, is going, but based on his track record, very, very deserving of the opportunity. Very deserving of the opportunity. The big three are moving on at Wimbledon. Novak Djokovic moved on, and hard to believe, but Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal will meet in the Wimbledon semifinals. It'll be their first matchup at the All England Club since their 2008 final. So Federer and Nadal both set up their 40th career showdown. They both lost. They both had to overcome a tough opening act. In fact, Federer, the number two seed, lost the first set to Kai Nishikori and then won 4-6, 6-1, 6-4, 6-4. It was Federer's 100th match win at the All England Club, becoming the first man to reach that total at any Grand Slam tournament. Not long after that ended on center court, number three-seeded Nadal finished off unseeded Sam Querrey 7-5, 6-2, 6-2 at court number one. So it'll be a great matchup between two of the greatest players in history, winners of more Grand Slam titles than any other men who have played tennis. Federer has got 20 Grand Slam titles, a record 8 coming at Wimbledon. Nadal has 18 major championships, 12 of them at the French Open, where he routed Federer in the semifinals last month. Nadal has a 24-15 career edge head-to-head, including 10-3 at the Slams. All of those basically at the French Open. So looking forward to seeing that. It's good for tennis that the big three are doing what they do. Federer with 102 titles overall, Nadal 82, Djokovic 74. They've dominated tennis. As we said in the majors, Federer with 20, Nadal 18, Djokovic 15. In prize money, holy cow. Federer's earned over $125 million. Nadal, $110 million. Djokovic leading them all with $131 million in prize money. As far as weeks at number one in the world, Federer with 310 weeks as the best of the best. Nadal, 196 weeks. Djokovic, 259. Considering they're basically all playing at the same time, that's kind of amazing. It's kind of amazing. The three have combined to win the last 10 majors and 14 of the last 16 Wimbledon titles. In the other semifinal, it'll draw far less attention. Djokovic, the number one seed, versus number 23, Roberto Bautista Agut. I got to be honest with you. I couldn't tell you who he is from a man on the moon. Couldn't tell you at all. But I'll be watching Federer and Nadal. I can promise you that. That will be a great semifinal coming up on Friday. So it's always good. It's always good when that happens. It's always good. Projections are out in the NBA. CBS Sports has come out with their projections as to who is going to make the playoffs. They have the Denver Nuggets as the number one seed with a total of 58 wins. The L.A. Clippers are number two. The Utah Jazz are three. Houston Rockets, four. The Lakers, with a win projection of 51, come in fifth. The Warriors in sixth. The Trailblazers in seventh. The Spurs in eighth with 47 wins, and that's eighth. They've got the Pelicans as the first team out. The first team out. I think they've aced this quick rebuild. I think they're better now than they were with Anthony Davis, because I think they have better players overall. I think their defense could be really, really good. So much, again, will depend on Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram. How much do they progress from within the shadow that is LeBron James? And can J.J. Redick and Derek Favors play like playoff players? If they do, this is a good team. Its only problem is it's in the West. And they may win 45, 46 games and be out of it and be back in the lottery. We just don't know. Hour number one in the books. Hour number two coming your way. Hot topics. Chandler Rome talking second half of the Major League Baseball season. And head coach Paul Maneri stops by to visit, talking about some new changes to the LSU baseball team. It's all coming your way after this timeout. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station number one and Widening the Gap. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back, everybody.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two, and away we go as we will keep you updated as necessary on what should soon be called Tropical Storm Barry. We'll keep you updated all throughout the day here on 103.7 The Game. So keep it locked in. If something is out there that you need to know, we will certainly bring it to you as soon as is possible. So, yeah, we're sports, but we're all about the community, and we want to make sure that you have the very latest information on what could be a Hurricane 1 storm by late Friday, early Saturday. Either way, the rain is coming, so prepare in accordance. And if you don't need to get out and about come Friday, don't get out and about. Just stay put, hunker down, ride this thing out, and keep it tuned in to 103.7 The Game. And look, get batteries. You got that old, I know it's all, but get your batteries ready just in case. And fill up your cars with gas and do all the little things that are necessary without any type of panic or any, there's nothing to panic about. Just in an orderly fashion, go take care of your business and everything will be fine. We got a busy second hour. Chandler Rome will join us to talk about the Houston Astros and the start of the second half of the Major League Baseball season. What a home run derby it was, and what an all-star game it was. It was really, really fun to watch. And then head coach Paul Manieri of LSU will join us. He has a new hitting coach. He's got some new additions to his infield. And I've got to ask Paul the billion-dollar question. What are you going to do? How are you self-examining yourself with this rash of injuries to your pitching staff? What else can you do? What can you do differently? What have you studied? What have you learned from other programs to avoid this? Because when healthy, they're pretty darn good. The problem is, they're never really healthy. So it's all coming your way this hour. But we start off hour number two the same way every day as we take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button for me, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, we're all going to get busy with this storm on the way, so hunker down, get ready to go, and we'll keep you updated throughout the course of the hours of the days to come. So fire away at will, my friend.
So pro tip, Jordy, don't go swimming in the rainwater during these Hot Topics because they will be absolutely fiery.
Wow.
It's just a mess going on.
Wow. Canal Street.
Yeah. Ooh. When you showed that to me, it made me immediately remember, I think this was either last year, the year before, Austin Nola, now with the Seattle Mariners, he was playing with the New Orleans Baby Cakes, if I'm not mistaken. He actually was swimming in the dugout while he had the floodwaters just hit towards that baseball stadium.
That's crazy. That's fun at baseball when they put the tarp out and you just start slipping and sliding. That's the greatest slip and slide ever. But let's hope that everybody stays safe, stays calm, and this thing goes away. But we'll keep you prepared just in case.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's something to kind of keep an eye on over the next few days, Jordy. But, of course, last night was the All-Star game, and it was definitely entertaining. 4-3. It was just a lot of fun. Kind of 4-3. AL gets the win, seventh straight year. But what's crazy is the fact you had the first three hits for the AL be all Houston Astros. George Springer, Alex Bregman, and Michael Brantley brought it home.
Yeah. And I love the fact that those guys were mic'd up. I love that the chemistry that they have, the fun that they have out there. That was really cool. Kudos to Fox and the technology that they had. I thought it made for a very, very special, a fun. I thought Freeman up at bat in the first inning had to go up against Verlander, and he's telling him, I got my earpiece in, and they're going to tell me the pitch, and it didn't bother Verlander. He struck him out. It was just really good, entertaining television.
I like the mic'd up stuff, but sometimes the miking it up during whenever an at bat is probably the weirdest part of it all. Like if you're out in the outfield and you're mic'd up, that's fine and dandy because you're probably not going to be doing a whole lot during that half an inning, hopefully. But doing it during an at-bat always seems weird to me.
That's what I loved about it because you actually, you could joke around a little bit, then it got serious, and then he's like, ooh, that was fast. That was pretty hard. I loved it. So I know it's never going to happen in a real game, but for that as an exhibition, I thought it was classic television. And the NBA ought to do it for their All-Star game. I know football does it, but mic them up and let's have some fun with it. Come on.
I think sometimes with basketball, Jordy, that might wind up being a little bit more controversial because we know sometimes there's a lot of jaw-jacking, and let's just say those words that they could say probably won't make it to air on occasion.
Yeah, there'll be a couple of bleeps here and there. You're right.
But, Jordy, you got to move over. Looking at the NBA, obviously, one of the big things that was talked about is the use of challenge flags for the 2019-2020 season. Is this going to be a good thing or a bad thing, Jordy? Because it's a little weird for me right now to see them actually implementing challenges in a basketball.
Yeah, is it literally flags? I don't know what it is.
That's what they're calling it.
I got to see it to believe it. I've got to watch it first and see how they implement it and what the standards are for it. I'm always about getting it right, but basketball seems so hard to do. It just is so fast, so quick. I got to see it first. I really do.
I mean, when you just look at what's going to be contested, it's a personal foul charge to the team, a called out of bounds violation, a goaltending violation, or a basket interference violation. Only one challenge flag for each team for the 2019-2020 season. Hopefully, at least it stays with one challenge per game, because if you add more, it winds up being a pain, and along with the fact that you obviously have, what is it, the last 2 or 3 minutes of each half you've got a review going on, like, you know, they're going to be having that TV working overtime a lot more now.
I would rather them do away with all the fouling and the free throw shooting. I would rather give the team the right to take the ball out of bounds and speed up the game that way instead of having this free throw thing. And the fact they used to do the hack-a-shack and, you know, guys that are running down the court, they just grab them and all. Don't let them shoot a free throw. Take the ball out of bounds and go again, and they'll stop that silliness.
I think that's definitely the big thing, Jordy, is to that's the next thing I think the NBA needs to handle. I know they've been trying to take care of the flopping incidents that have happened in the past, but I think the biggest thing they need to focus in on is, without a doubt, getting rid of the hack-a-shack and making sure that's less of a thing now, because it's just that takes up so much of the ballgame, especially in the waning moments.
No, it's awful.
When you're wanting to go home.
Yeah. It's awful. It is. I think they ought to put a 4-point line out there. Like, throw that thing out there. Make it at the center jump circle on both sides of the court. And if you make a shot from there, it's worth 4. That would make some drama at the end of games. Then you never have a lead too safe. So I'm all for that.
I'd love it, but you know, I'd take a page from the Big Three, Jordy. Have it be like the hot spots be a 4-point shot. I think that'd be really cool, Jordy. But last one,
basically,
if you've seen the Big Three, they have like little circles where if you shoot in that circle, it's 4 points. I think that would be really cool to do that rather than, you know, add another line on top of that. But I know that's something they'll probably be thinking about down the line. But last one, Jordy, Odds Shark just put out the odds to lead the NFL in passing yards. And Drew Brees, not a favorite to win this one. Who would you think winds up being the prohibitive favorite heading into the season?
Pat Mahomes.
Yes, indeed. Pat Mahomes, he is plus 450 right now, Jordy, according to Odd Shark, with Drew Brees well behind him, plus 1,800 right now. But hey, I definitely wouldn't mind putting some odds on Jared Goff at plus 3,000.
Just get the wins on the left side of the ledger.
Yes.
There's your Hot Topics of the Day, brought to you by the best hot sauce every day, and that's Cajun Chef. Cajun Chef hot sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a little small bottle with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. For nearly 90 years now, the Biard family right there in St. Martinville producing the great product of Cajun Chef hot sauce. Chandler Rome joins us from Cleveland. talking about the All-Star game next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
Hey, we welcome you back. The midsummer break just about over. The Astros getting ready to go take on the Texas Rangers after another American League win at the All-Star game in Cleveland. Well represented were the Astros. The first run of the game produced off the bat of an Astro and scored by an Astro. And Chandler Rome was there. He is the beat writer for the Astros for the Houston Chronicle. And great to have you on, buddy. Did you have fun in Cleveland?
I love Cleveland, actually. It's a very underrated city in my mind. I think it gets a lot of bad,
yeah.
It gets a bad rap. There's a lot to do. Downtown is really vibrant. They hosted a really, really good All-Star game. I mean, everything is within walking distance. A lot of stuff around the ballpark, a lot of stuff to do, a lot of giveaways for fans. Looks like the fans really enjoyed it. Justin Verlander, a guy that's been to a ton of All-Star games, said it was probably one of his favorites he's ever been to. And I'd have to agree. I mean, I had a great time.
How would you sum up the first half of the season for the Astros? They're up 7.5 games in their division. The only team with more wins in the American League are the Yankees. But how would you surmise the first half of the season with all the injuries and still kind of maintaining?
Yeah, I guess I'd summarize it with they sort of just kind of hung on. They got to the All-Star break, and that was kind of the thing that they needed. They needed the All-Star break probably more than most teams out there. They're in a division that they are head and shoulders the most talented team. They should win the division going away, but obviously I don't think they're really content with that. They want to get home field advantage. They want to be at Minute Maid Park throughout the playoffs. And they're going to have to – it's going to be part of the front office. It's going to have to go in the next 2 weeks and address a pretty glaring deficiency on the team. They need a fourth starter to go behind Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander, and Wade Miley. And they've got to get Carlos Correa and Alexis Diaz back to kind of solidify the lineup, which right now is a little bit top heavy. But you had good signs going into the break. Yuli Gurriel had one of probably the best stretches of his major league career right before the break. Jose Altuve appears to be back to full health. George Springer is swinging the bat well. So they sort of hung on. You know, June was kind of a rough month for them at the beginning, but all in all, it's kind of what you expected. They're in a bad division where they're the head and shoulders, the best team, and they're up 7.5 games.
Right. Chandler Rome, Houston Chronicle, joining us. He's in the airport in Cleveland on his way back to the South. You talk about needing a fourth starter. There's all kind of rumors out there that the Astros are among multiple teams interested in the New York Mets starter, Noah Syndergaard. Is there fire to that smoke? Or smoke to that fire, whatever you want to put it?
Well, I think when you get to this sort of part of the season, when you get to the rumor season of this team has interest in this guy and this team has interest in that guy, I think you have to remember the Astros are in the market for a starting pitcher. I mean, they're going to have some sort of interest in every starting pitcher that's available. So yeah, I'd imagine, yeah, they are intrigued in Noah Syndergaard. But Noah Syndergaard's a guy that did not have a good first half. He has a ERA nearing 5. He's only striking out 8 per 9, which is kind of low for him. He had a 1.3 whip. I mean, this is not a first half that we're accustomed to from Noah Syndergaard. And I think you have to remember, too, with Syndergaard, he's a guy that's under team – he would be under the Astros team control for 3 years. He's a free agent in 2022. Those guys as controllable starters, they command a bigger prospect return. You know, you got to pay a lot more for them. And Jeff Luhnow has not really shown to be a general manager that mortgages his future for the short term. You haven't seen him give away a ton of prospects in his tenure. So I don't know if the Astros would be willing to part with some of their top prospects for a guy like Noah Syndergaard. But
gotcha.
Given the recent news that Corbin Martin had Tommy John surgery, given that Colin McHugh is slated to go into free agency, Garrett Cole is slated to go into free agency, and Wade Miley is slated to go into free agency, the Astros do need some sort of controllable starter to give them some foundation behind Justin Verlander in their future rotation. So, yeah, I could see the Astros certainly being a player for a controllable starter. I don't know if it's Syndergaard. I don't know if it's Matt Boyd for the Tigers. But there's a need for a controllable starter. But it's going to all depend on how many prospects Jeff Luhnow wants to part with.
Makes perfect sense. Chandler Rome, kind enough to join us. How cool was it to see Michael Brantley double into the left center field gap to score his Astros teammate Alex Bregman for the American League to strike first? And what a pickup Brantley has become for this club. Just very good front office work again.
Yeah, and I think the coolest part was that he did it in Cleveland at Progressive Field, where he played the first 10 years of his career. It was the first time he'd been back to Progressive Field since signing with the Astros this offseason. He got a huge reception from the fans. The fans really love him over there. And kind of see the reception he got and then to come through with the base hit and get another big reception. Michael Brantley's not a guy that really shows much emotion. He's very stoic and very smooth and kind of broke down a little bit. He said he wanted to hold the emotion back, but he kind of couldn't at the end. So it was cool to see him kind of return home and get the reception he got. And, yeah, you mentioned it. He's been everything the Astros could ask for and more on the field. But I think more of his contribution has been off the field, where he's been a kind of a mentor and a sounding board for George Springer, a guy that, you know, kind of needs some guidance every now and then. I think everybody in the clubhouse does. But Springer maybe needs somebody to kind of be a sounding board for, kind of needs that older guy to sort of lean on. And Michael Brantley's been that for him. And that's probably meant more to the club, honestly. Brantley's work in the clubhouse than his work on the field.
Ah, that's awesome. Chandler Rome, kind enough to join us. Justin Verlander, I love him as a player. I love the fact that he speaks his mind. What has he told you about Major League Baseball juicing the balls up for more offense? Get to the core of that for me.
Well, what you heard from him, what he told ESPN on Monday is nothing new. He's kind of been on that crusade for the last 2 or 3 years. He brought it up after at least four of his starts this year. He referenced either a juice ball or something to that effect. He brought it up. So, but for him to do it in sort of a profanity laden way, while kind of mentioning Rob Manfred by name, and doing it in a week where the entire baseball world really was in Cleveland, it kind of cast a weird shadow over the event. He did walk it back a little bit last night and kind of mentioned that he wanted to work together with the league and, you know, kind of figure out a better way to be transparent, figure out a better way to kind of figure out what they want to do with the baseball. But I think the crux of the issue is baseball needs to decide, like, what they want to be. Do they want to be a sport that it is now, where it's home runs and strikeouts and guys are hitting a lot of balls out of the park, the guys are also striking out, or do they want to go back to, you know, when Verlander was coming up about 5 or 10 years ago, where a lot of balls in play, it's kind of a different way to play the game. And Verlander's more of a purist, and there are young guys now that are not purists that like to see the home runs, and fans certainly like to see home runs. So I think until baseball can figure out kind of where it wants to go and what direction it wants to take, I don't know that there is a clear answer, but I know Justin Verlander kind of wants to be a part of the discussion and wants to see how this plays out.
He is Chandler Rome, the Houston Chronicle. Astros getting ready to take on the Rangers. They ended up for the All-Star break with a wild one, an 11-10 extra inning, kind of a controversial play at home plate. That's always a good way to kind of take a break coming off of a win. How do you see the second half? I mean, you talk about getting healthy. You talk about adding some key components to the club. But are you buying that the Twins are legit and the Yankees? Do you expect a second half run by the Red Sox? Or how do you see the second half going on?
Oh, I definitely think the Yankees are legit. I think the Yankees are they were playing as well as anybody going into the break. I think maybe on paper they may be a little bit better than the Astros just on paper, but you don't play the games on paper. You play the games on the field. I think the Twins, I think that AL Central race is going to really be crucial to kind of determine a couple things. A, kind of, if the season ended today, the Astros would play the Twins in the ALDS. Now, if Cleveland can kind of make a little bit of run, they may not be sellers at the deadline. And there's a couple pitchers on that staff that maybe a lot of teams would covet, Trevor Bauer being one of them. Maybe that affects the Astros' trade plans. I don't know. But I think in the second half, the key first is going to be to get Carlos Correa back. And I think this team just needs a little bit more consistency, just running out a consistent lineup on a day-to-day basis. You know, settling into a regular nine and with a couple bench guys sprinkled in here and there. There hasn't been much of that. There hasn't been much continuity in the first half. They were shuttling guys a lot from AAA, not really having much in the way of consistency. And I think if this team can get that, you know, maybe at the end of July, beginning of August, and carry that into the postseason, that could be the best thing for them.
Chandler Rome, the Houston Chronicle, I'll let you get away on this one. He didn't win the million, but Vlad Guerrero Jr. had to be the star of the show for that home run derby. How awesome was that?
Yeah, that was pretty unbelievable. I've never seen anything like that. And, you know, I guess that sort of goes back to what Justin Verlander is kind of railing on. I mean, that display kind of captivated an entire audience, an audience that most of the people that were tweeting about it, that were following it, don't watch baseball regularly. And then they see Vlad Guerrero Jr. doing what he's doing, and it was unbelievable. And maybe that adds a little fuel to the people that oppose Justin Verlander and kind of wants the game to go in this direction. But I thought what Vlad did was unbelievable. He hit 91 home runs, but I think a lot of people don't realize they took batting practice before the home run derby started. So in essence, he really hit about 115 home runs on Monday night and still lost the derby. Jeez, didn't win the $1 million.
Amazing.
But I thought the finals were unbelievable. It was a home run derby that probably the best that they've ever had, and I know a lot of people around baseball were happy to be associated with it.
I'm with you, man. So look, safe travels, and greatly appreciate the time, my friend. Baton Rouge and LSU misses you, but it's the Astros game. So thanks for the time, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Jordy. Appreciate you.
You take care. That's Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. Paul Maneri made some announcements, a new hitting coach, and a couple of new players. Plus, what's he going to do to solve the pitching dilemma with injuries? Paul Maneri joins us next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. 103.7 The Game. 103.7TheGame.com. Some news coming out of the LSU baseball office, a couple of additions, one on the coaching side, a couple of new players joining the fray. So with that in mind, I thought it'd be a perfect time to talk about that and other things with the head coach of the LSU Tigers, good friend Mr. Paul Maneri. Paul, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, Jordy. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm terrific. Just hoping the storm doesn't affect this great state that we're in. Hopefully it moves or dissipates and goes away. But in the meantime, you've got a new volunteer coach, hitting coach. And if numbers don't lie, Eddie Smith at 35 years young knows what the heck he's doing. What attracted you to Eddie? And talk about the change.
Well, in doing an evaluation of our program, Jordy, I just felt, you know, that I just thought we could do a little bit better offensively than we did last year. And, you know, this quote-unquote volunteer position is really kind of a pain in the neck, you know. And so, you know, because of the way it's structured, it just lends towards having an inexperienced young coach that's kind of learning on the job. And that's the way it's been, you know, for quite a while here. And and because of that, you know, I just feel like we're not fulfilling our potential. So I just decided to you know, internally make some decisions, and I just felt that we needed a more experienced, proven coach. And I've known Eddie Smith for 15 years. He played for me at Notre Dame. He's really the real-life Rudy. Applied for Notre Dame out of high school, got rejected, went to junior college, kept applying. And eventually, you know, he got accepted into Notre Dame as a junior college transfer, which never happens.
Wow.
And he walked onto the baseball team. I loved his grit and his hustle and his determination, and so I carved out a spot for him on the team. He was a very valuable utility infielder for us. And actually, I was going to keep him on after his senior year as the volunteer at Notre Dame. But I took the job at LSU that summer. And so I called my good friend Brian O'Connor at Virginia and asked him if he would have anything for Eddie there, because I had already filled my volunteer spot here with Blair Barbier. And so Brian said his volunteer spot was filled, but he had an opening for his baseball operations director. So he put Eddie on there. He started out at Virginia as the baseball ops guy, and then after 2 years moved into a coaching position on the field. And he helped Virginia go to the World Series twice and win 3 ACC championships. So I've just been following his career from there. He went to Santa Clara, to Notre Dame for a year, and then he took over his own program at junior college in the state of Washington, his home state. And he did a tremendous job there, to the point that 1 year he was named National Coach of the Year. And then when Tulane had an opening down here, somehow Eddie's name got him on Travis Jewett's desk, and Travis called me about him, and I gave him a very high recommendation. And he went to Tulane, and he's done a bang-up job there for the last 2 years.
Yes.
Yeah, so I followed his career, and I just think he's an outstanding coach, extremely intelligent, as you might imagine, very articulate, knows the game. He's got a tremendous systematic plan for working with hitters, and obviously it worked very well at Tulane last year. They broke about every record that their conference had offensively. And so I decided to approach him and see if he'd have an interest in coming over to LSU. And for us, he decided to do it, and I think it's going to pay huge dividends for us.
I know that volunteer coach, that means it's taking money out of your pocket with all those summer camp receipts. I know how that works, Paul. I know.
Well, it's really a shame that the NCAA voted down the third assistance position, in April. It's a shame, really, because when you think about it, Jordy, you have 35 players, and you really have only 3 full-time coaches. You know, that's over 11 point something players per coach. No other sport in NCAA has such a bad ratio of athletes per coach. And, you know, really, if you think about a baseball staff, there's 3 main areas that you need assistance with: recruiting, pitching, and hitting. And there really should be 3 different positions. But what has always happened until recently, what generally happens is your hitting coach or your pitching coach also has the dual job of being the recruiting coordinator. Well, if you do your recruiting properly, that means you're going to be out on the road and you're going to miss practices and you're going to miss games.
And if you do your
hitting coach properly or your pitching coach properly, then you can't be gone. You got to be there with your current players. So I just think it's inherently unfair that, you know, you recruit a player to your school under the auspicious idea that you're going to develop them, and then your coach is gone recruiting part of the time while you're here trying to develop. So what happened was, a couple years ago when our hitting coach left from Mississippi State, our hitting coach / recruiting coordinator left, I had a guy, Nolan Kane, waiting in the wings as our volunteer, and I just thought Nolan was ready and he was a special talent, and I made him our recruiting coordinator, partially to salvage our recruiting class at that time and also, you know, going forward. But I didn't want to give him the hitting, and I didn't want to give him the pitching. Of course, we had Alan Dunn already on staff, and Nolan is a former pitcher, so he wasn't really qualified to be the hitting coach. So I moved Mikey Gibbs up from being the baseball operations director to hitting coach, and that's kind of just started this trend of, you know, having a young and experienced hitting coach. So I just decided to bite the bullet this year and just felt that, you know, for us to fulfill our full potential as a program, we just needed to have somebody that was more experienced and had a proven record for success.
What do you look for in a hitting coach? You got to have similar philosophies. You like to play the game of baseball a certain way. You've got to be in sync with your new hitting coach. So what are you specifically looking for?
Well, you know, there are some people that just want to reinvent the game. And I know there's a lot of progressive ways about doing things. And I talk to other people as well. You know, I talked to the hitting coordinator for the minor leagues of the Houston Astros, who happens to be a former player of mine as well. And, you know, Houston Astros are on the cutting edge of doing all kinds of new and progressive things and in their minor league system, not just with their big leaguers, okay?
Right.
And that was intriguing to me. But, you know, I don't think that, you know, that it was the right time for this particular person to leave. The Houston Astros have been really good to him, and he's moving along in their organization. So, you know, he didn't express as much interest for the possibility. You know, when I look at, I have obviously philosophies about hitting that have been nurtured throughout 38 years of coaching. And so you don't really want somebody that's totally opposite of your theories about what you believe in. But it's one of those areas, Jordy, that you don't really want to reinvent the wheel. It's really just more of a systematic way of working with the hitters. You know, Eddie made a great presentation to me, and he had all these different areas that go into being a successful hitter. And then when you broke down each area, he had a plan of how to attack each of those areas, whether it was opposite field hitting, whether it was pitch recognition, whether it was, you know, being able to try to backspin the ball for home runs, whether, you know, all those kinds of things. And he had all the different ways that he worked on those kinds of things. And I just really was impressed with his entire plan. And like I said, it's a very nice systematic plan. It's not reinventing the wheel. It's just being consistent in your theories and how you work with them. And honestly, all the things that he was talking about were stuff that I've coached throughout the years and believe in wholeheartedly. So I just think it's going to be a matter of, you know, his personality, working with the players, and I think you're going to see more consistency, and maybe we'll draw some more walks, maybe not strike out quite as frequently, and hopefully hit some more home runs.
That's awesome. Paul Maneri, kind enough to join us. So you add a new coach. You got a couple of new infielders, both with the first name of Zach Arnold, Zach Mathis. You had a couple of kids that went on and signed with professional baseball. You said you were going to scour the country. How did you get these kids? And tell us a little bit about them.
Well, you know, we did. We lost two infielders in the draft, Reese Hines and Christian Cairo. And so we were a little bit shorthanded. And we've got a really good two really good infielders that are coming in this year already in our freshman class. I love Collier Cranford, who's an infielder out of Zachary High School. But unfortunately, this last spring, he hurt his throwing arm. So he actually had Tommy John surgery. You know, we think of Tommy John surgery with pitchers, not very often with infielders. But Collier was doing both. You know, he was pitching and playing shortstop for his Zachary team, and unfortunately his elbow gave way. So he won't even be able to participate this fall. Well, he will in a modified way. He just won't be able to throw. But I have great hopes for Collier, and I think he's a really outstanding player. And then we have another really good player by the name of Cade Doty out of Denham Springs.
Right, Denham Springs.
But I was just concerned about the depth of our infield, and you always want to try to upgrade as well. I forgot we had another infielder by the name of Tom Biggs from Monroe. Okay. But Tom is a two-way player, so we're going to want to see what he can do on the mound for us as well. And, you know, so the combination of just being a little bit shorthanded, and then also with the intention of trying to upgrade your program. You know, if you can get better players that are, you know, can beat out, you know, a current player that you have on your team, you want to give them that chance to do that. And that's how your program keeps moving forward and you keep getting better. So Nolan and I went out and just started, you know, getting the word out that we needed infielders. And there's a new rule, Jordy, in college baseball that it's in all of athletics, that if there's a coaching change at a school and you signed a national letter of intent, you can now make an appeal to try to get out of that national letter of intent.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. It's, you know, kids choose a school in large part because of the coach that they would be playing for, and when that coach leaves, you hate to see a player continue to be tied to that school. So what happened is we actually found these two boys had signed with other schools, but once the coach was fired, they had asked for a release from those schools, and so they were basically back out on the open market. So we got a young man from San Diego by the name of Zach Arnold. He was drafted, I think, around the 32nd or 34th round, something like that. But he's really good shortstop. Mm-hmm. He's a good-looking kid, 6'3". He's got some swings of bat good.
Wow.
He's already playing in a collegiate summer league, and he's doing very well. And then there was a kid by the name of Zach Mathis from Northern California who had signed with did I tell you Zach Arnold had signed with Oregon, and this other boy had signed with Cal State Northridge. And like I said, both coaches there were coaching changes at both schools. And the junior college transfer, Zach Mathis, he's a good left-handed hitter. He hit about 10 home runs this year, and he looks like a really good little ball player. And we brought him in on visits, and they decided to come with LSU. So I feel really strong now about the depth in our infield and the quality of our infielders, and should be some great competition for the positions this fall.
Paul Maneri, kind enough to join us. Speaking of infielders, how cool was it to see in Cleveland your third baseman and your second baseman out there starting for the American League?
Oh, Jordy, how much pride do you think I sat there and watched that game with last night? You know, just, you know, I had visited both of them in New York City just about 3 weeks ago. They were playing each other. And I went up there and took my son. I gave myself a late Father's Day gift by taking my two boys to Yankee Stadium, and the Astros were playing the Yankees. So I got to visit with them, and they're just wonderful young men, very proud of their affiliation with LSU. They are very proud of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to see them excelling at the level that they are just fills my chest with pride. And not only those two are they former shortstops from LSU, but then Austin Nola made his major league debut. And, in fact, he hit his first major league home run over in Houston against Alex Bregman's team. So three former LSU shortstops are now in the major leagues, and they're all doing very well.
And more to come. I've got to ask you the million-dollar question on everybody's mind. You've had such poor luck this past. I've never seen a pitching staff decimated, and I am amazed that this team went as far as they did with all the injuries that you sustained. It's really kind of remarkable. How are you looking? How are you approaching that heading into, you know, you got guys in the summertime, and then you've got camp coming up in the fall. What's your approach with the pitching staff to see if you can somehow get some good fortune for a change?
Well, you know, Jordy, I think any good coach or any good program is always in a self-analysis way. You know, just like I analyzed our hitting situation, I've analyzed our pitching situation, and we're going to try to instill a few changes in hopes that it will help. For example, we're going to change our strength and conditioning philosophy and how we work with the pitchers in hopes, you know, they've worked so hard and they've done a lot of running to get their legs in shape and so forth. And we've talked to a lot of different schools, a lot of different professional organizations. Our strength coach, Travis Roy, has done a lot of background work, and so we've modified what we're going to do. You know, believe it or not, pitchers are running less and less at a lot of places. They're doing more explosive-type work, you know, pushing sleds or short sprints, that type of thing. So we're hoping that maybe there's a correlation that if the legs are not tired, then it doesn't put as much strain on the arm, that type of thing. So that's just an example of some of the things that we're doing to readdress it. We're going to involve a lot more of our technology that's been created. There's a thing called a Modus sleeve that our pitchers will wear all the time, and it has a gadget in it that's supposed to give our trainer some data on how stressed the elbow is, and if it reaches a certain level, then he's going to communicate to our pitching coach that this pitcher has to back off today on how much he's throwing, in the hopes that maybe that'll limit some injuries. We have some other technical devices that we're going to use. We basically are creating a pitching lab at our facility here. It's really an auxiliary bullpen off the field of play, but it's also going to have cameras that are super slow motion cameras. It's got this other system called Rapsodo that can determine the spin rate on the ball and things like that. And so we're just doing everything that's available to us to try to, you know, curtail this rash of injuries that we've had. And some of it, in all honesty, Jordy, these kids arrived on campus already kind of banged up,
So it's really not the
fault of our pitching staff, our pitching coach, or our pitching staff, or our program, or anything like that. Some kids just showed up hurt. We had, I think, three of them that were out this year that showed up and never threw a ball for us. But I think in some ways there's things that we need to kind of adjust going forward and just try some different methods in hopes that it'll be beneficial.
That's awesome. Because when healthy, I'll put your pitching staff against anybody in the country, and I'm certainly hoping that's the case. Well, congratulations on the hires and the signees and the belated Father's Day present to Yankee Stadium. That was pretty cool, and I hope you have a great rest of your summer. And thank you for your time as always, buddy. You're the best.
Well, thanks, Jordy. And listen, before I go, I'd be remiss if I just didn't mention, I know you're broadcasting in Lafayette,
yes.
And yesterday
yes.
I went to the funeral of Tony Robichaud, and I just, you know, express my condolences to really the whole community of Lafayette. What a tremendous loss for the community. A wonderful man that made his impact on our earth during his short time, and I know everybody is very distraught about that, as am I. It's a great loss, not only for Lafayette, but for the state of Louisiana and for all of college baseball. And I just hope that the healing for the people in that community will happen. And I just want everybody to know how sorry I am about the loss of Tony.
Thank you, Paul. Really appreciate it. You take care.
Okay.
God bless.
Take care, Jordy.
All right. And we'll take a timeout. We'll come back here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
And we're back finishing touches to this hump day edition of the Jordy Hultberg Show. Let's go straight to the history lesson time of the program. It was on this day, July 10th, the year 1999, after a scoreless regulation and extra time, the World Cup final between the USA and China's women's national teams came down to a penalty kick. Brandi Chastain's iconic kick found the back of the net for a United States win. She took off the shirt and got to her knees, and it was on the cover of every magazine and newspaper around the world on this day, July 10th, 1999. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share with the likes of happy 31st birthday, Antonio Brown, now of the Oakland Raiders. Happy 54th birthday to retired college football coach for the time being, Urban Meyer. And happy 39th birthday to the lovely Jessica Simpson. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks to our guest, Chris Cozart of KLFY with the weather update, Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle, and Paul Maneri of the LSU baseball team. Tomorrow, heck, we'll see. We'll figure it out. It's all I can tell you at this point in time. But I can tell you that CD, not a better producer in the business. Thank you for all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to our partners that make it possible. Stay safe. Stay dry. Keep watching and listening. We'll keep updating you throughout the course of the afternoon and tomorrow on Barry. Until then, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.